Sorry, my daddy's mad at you. This is the most awkward situation ever. My friend's dad possibly wants to kill me. Not your fault, I mumble. I understand why my brother didn't invite my mama. But her voice cracks. She going through a lot, Star, with him. Kenya wipes her face on her arm. I wish she'd leave him. Maybe she afraid to, I say. Look at me. I was afraid to speak out for Khalil, and you went off on me about it. I didn't go off. Yeah, you did. Trust me, no, I didn't. You'll know when I go off on you. Anyway, I know it's not the same, but good Lord, I never thought I'd say this. I think I understand, Aisha. It's hard to stand up for yourself sometimes. She may need that push, too. So you want me to go off on her? I can't believe you think I went off on you, sensitive ass. My mouth flies open. You know what? I'm gonna let that slide. Nah, I ain't say you need to go off on her. That would be stupid. I sigh. I don't know. I don't either. We go silent. Kenya wipes her face again. I'm good. She gets up. I'm good. You sure? Yes. Stop asking me that. Come on. Let's go back out there and stop them from talking about my brother, because you know they're talking. She heads for the door, but I say, our brother. Kenya turns around. What? Our brother. He's mine, too. I didn't say it in a mean way, or even with an attitude. I swear. She doesn't respond. Not even an okay. Not that I expected her to suddenly go, of course he's our brother. I'm extremely sorry for acting like he wasn't yours, too. I hoped for something, though. Kenya goes outside. Seven and Aisha unknowingly hit the pause button on the party. The music's off, and Seven's friends stand around talking in hushed tones. Chris and Maya walk up to me.
Is Seven okay?
Maya asks. Who turned the music off? I ask. Chris shrugs. I pick up Daddy's iPod from the patio table, our DJ for the afternoon that's hooked up to the sound system. Scrolling through the playlist, I find this Kendrick Lamar song Seven played for me one day, right after Khalil died. Kendrick raps about how everything will be all right. Seven said it's for both of us. I hit play and hope he hears it. It's for Kenya, too. Midway through the song, Seven and Layla come back out. His eyes are puffy and pink, but dry. He smiles at me a little and gives a quick nod. I return it. Mama leads Daddy outside. They're both wearing cone-shaped birthday hats, and Daddy carries a huge sheet cake with candles lit on top of it. Happy birthday to ya, they sing. And Mama does this not as embarrassing shoulder bounce. Happy birthday to ya. Happy birthday. Seven smiles from ear to ear. I turn the music down. Daddy sets the cake on the patio table and everybody crowds around it and Seven. Our family, Kenya, Devante, and Layla, basically all the black people, sing the Stevie Wonder version of Happy Birthday. Maya seems to know it. A lot of Seven's friends look lost. Chris does too. These cultural differences are crazy sometimes. Nana takes the song way too far and hits notes that don't need to be hit. Mama tells her, the candles are about to go out, Mama. She's so damn dramatic. Seven leans down to blow the candles out, but Daddy says, wait, man, you know you don't blow no candles out till I say something. Oh, Pops. He can't tell you what to do, Seven, Sekani chirps. You're grown now. Daddy shoots Sekani an up and down look. Boy? He turns to Seven. I'm proud of you, man. Like I told you, I never got a diploma.
A lot of young brothers don't get theirs. And where we come from, a lot of them don't make it to 18. Some do make it, but they're messed up by the time they get there. Not you, though. You're going places, no doubt. I always knew that. See, I believe in giving my kids names that mean something. Sekani, that means merriment and joy.
I snort. Sekani side-eyes me.
I named your sister Star because she was my light in the darkness. 7, that's a holy number, the number of perfection. I ain't saying you're perfect, nobody is, but you're the perfect gift God gave me. I love you, man. Happy birthday and congratulations.
Daddy affectionately clasps 7's neck. 7 grins wider.
Love you too, Pops.
The cake is one of Mrs. Rook's red velvets. Everybody goes on and on about how good it is. Uncle Carlos pigs out on at least 3 slices. There's more dancing, laughing. All in all, it's a good day. Good days don't last forever, though. Part 5. 13 weeks after it. The decision. 22. In our new neighborhood, I can simply tell my parents I'm going for a walk and leave. We just got off the phone with Ms. Ofra, who said the grand jury will announce their decision in a few hours. She claims only the grand jurors know the decision, but I've got a sinking feeling I know it. It's always the decision. I stick my hands in the pockets of my sleeveless hoodie. Some kids race past on bikes and scooters, nearly knock me over. Doubt they're worried about the grand jury's decision. They aren't hurrying inside like the kids back home are probably doing. Home. We started moving into our new house this past weekend. 5 days later, this place doesn't feel like home yet. It could be all the unpacked boxes, or the street names, I don't know. And it's almost too quiet. No Fodiance in his creaky cart, or Mrs. Pearl hollering a greeting from across the street. I need normal. I text Chris. Less than 10 minutes later, he picks me up in his dad's Benz. The Bryants live in the only house on their street that has a separate house attached to it for a butler. Mr. Bryant owns 8 cars, mostly antiques, and a garage to store them all. Chris parks in one of the 2 empty spots. Your parents gone? I ask.
Yep, date night at the country club.
Most of Chris's house looks too fancy to live in. Statues, oil paintings, chandeliers. A museum more than a home. Chris's suite on the 3rd floor is more normal looking. There's a leather couch in his room, right in front of the flat screen TV and video game systems. His floor is painted to look like a half basketball court, and he can play on an actual hoop on his wall. His California king-size bed has been made, a rare sight. I never knew there was anything larger than a king-size bed before I met him. I pull my Timbs off and grab the remote from his nightstand. As I throw myself onto his bed, I flick the TV on. Chris steps out his chucks and sits at his desk, where a drum pad, a keyboard, and turntables are hooked up to a Mac.
Check this out, he says, and plays a beat.
I prop myself up on my elbows and nod along. It's got an old school feel to it, like something Dre and Snoop would have used back in the day. Nice.
Thanks. I think I need to take some of that bass out, though.
He turns around and gets to work. I pick at a loose thread on his comforter. Do you think they're gonna charge him?
Do you?
No. Chris spins his chair back around. My eyes are watery and I lie on my side. He climbs in next to me so we're facing each other. Chris presses his forehead against mine.
I'm sorry.
You didn't do anything.
But I feel like I should apologize on behalf of white people everywhere.
You don't have to.
But I want to.
Lying in his California king-size bed, in his suite, in his gigantic house, I realized the truth. I mean, it's been there all along. But in this moment, lights flash around it. We shouldn't be together, I say.
Why not?
My old house in Garden Heights could fit in your house.
So?
My dad was a gangbanger.
My dad gambles.
I grew up in the projects.
I grew up with a roof over my head, too.
I sigh and start to turn my back to him. He holds my shoulder so I won't.
Don't let this stuff get in your head again, Star.
You ever notice how people look at us?
What people?
People, I say. It takes them a second to realize we're a couple.
Who gives a fuck?
Me.
Why?
Because you should be with Haley. He recoils.
Why the hell would I do that?
Not Haley, but you know, blonde, rich, white.
I prefer beautiful, amazing, Star.
He doesn't get it. But I don't want to talk about it anymore. I want to get so caught up in him that the grand jury's decision isn't even a thing. I kiss his lips, which always have and always will be perfect. He kisses me back. And soon we're making out like it's the only thing we know how to do. It's not enough. My hands travel below his chest, and he's bulging in more than his arms. I start unzipping his jeans. He grabs my hand.
Whoa! What are you doing?
What do you think?
His eyes search mine. Star, I want to. I do.
I know you do. And it's the perfect opportunity. I trail kisses along his neck, getting each of those perfectly placed freckles. Nobody's here but us.
But we can't,
he says, voice strained.
Not like this.
Why not? I slip my hand in his pants, heading for the bulge.
Because you're not in a good place.
I stop. He looks at me, and I look at him. My vision blurs. Chris wraps his arms around me and pulls me closer. I bury my face in his shirt. He smells like a perfect combination of Lever soap and Old Spice. The thump of his heart is better than any beat he's ever made. My normal, in the flesh. Chris rests his chin on top of my head.
Star.
He lets me cry as much as I need to. My phone vibrates against my thigh, waking me up. It's almost pitch black in Chris's room. The red sky shines a bit of light through his windows. He sleeps soundly and holds me like that's how he always sleeps. My phone buzzes again. I untangle myself out of Chris's arms and crawl to the foot of the bed. I fish my phone from my pocket. Seven's face lights up my screen. I try not to sound too groggy. Hello?
Where the hell are you?
Seven barks. Has the decision been announced?
No. Answer my question.
Chris's house. Seven sucks his teeth.
I don't even want to know. Is Devante over there?
No. Why?
Uncle Carlos said he walked out a while ago. Nobody's seen him since.
My stomach clenches. What?
Yeah. If you weren't fooling around with your boyfriend, you'd know that.
You're really making me feel guilty right now? He sighs.
I know you're going through a lot, but damn, Star, you can't disappear on us like that. Ma's looking for you. She's worried sick, and Pop's had to go protect the store in case, you know.
I crawl back to Chris and shake his shoulder. Come get us, I tell Seven. We'll help you look for Devante. I send Mama a text to let her know where I am, where I'm going, and that I'm okay. I don't have the guts to call her. And have her go off on me? Nah, no thanks. Seven is talking on his phone when he pulls into the driveway. By the look on his face, somebody's gotta be dead. I throw open the passenger door. What's wrong?
Kenya, calm down, he says. What happened?
Seven listens and looks more horrified by the second. Then he suddenly says,
I'm on my way,
and tosses the phone on the back seat.
It's Devante.
Whoa, wait. I'm holding the door and he's revving up his engine. What happened?
I don't know. Chris, take Star home.
And let you go to Garden Heights by yourself? But shoot, actions are louder. I climb in the passenger seat.
I'm coming too, Chris says.
I let my seat forward and he climbs in the back. Luckily or unluckily, Seven doesn't have time to argue. We pull off. Seven cuts the 45-minute drive to Garden Heights to 30. The entire drive, I plead with God to let Devante be okay. The sun's gone by the time we get off the freeway. I fight the urge to tell Seven to turn around. This is Chris's first time in my neighborhood. But I have to trust him. He wants me to let him in, and this is the most in he could get. At the Cedar Grove Projects, there's graffiti on the walls and broken down cars in the courtyard. Under the Black Jesus mural at the clinic, grass grows up through the cracks in the sidewalk. Trash litters every curb we pass. Two junkies argue loudly on a corner. There's lots of hoopties, cars that should have been in the junkyard a long time ago. The houses are old, small. Whatever Chris thinks doesn't come out his mouth. Seven parks in front of Aisha's house. The paint is peeling and the windows have sheets in them instead of blinds and curtains. Aisha's pink BMW and King's gray one make an L shape on the yard. The grass is completely gone from years of them parking there. Gray cars fitted with rims sit in the driveway and along the street. Seven turns his ignition off.
Kenya said they're all in the backyard. I should be good. Y'all stay here.
Judging by those cars, for one Seven, there's about 50 King Lords. I don't care if King is pissed at me. I'm not letting my brother go in there alone. I'm coming with you.
No.
I said I'm coming.
Star. I don't have time for...
I fold my arms. Try and make me stay. He can't, and he won't. Seven sighs.
Fine. Chris, stay here. Hell no, I'm not staying out here by myself.
We all get out. Music echoes from the backyard along with random shouts and laughter. A pair of gray high tops dangle by their laces from the utility line in front of the house, telling everybody who can decipher the code that drugs are sold here. Seven takes the steps two at a time and throws the front door open.
Kenya!
Compared to the outside, the inside is 5-star hotel nice. They have a damn chandelier in the living room and brand new leather furniture. A flat screen TV takes up a whole wall and tropical fish swim around in a tank on another wall. The definition of hood rich.
Kenya!
Seven repeats, going down the hall. From the front door, I see the back door. A whole lot of King Lords dance with women in the backyard. King's in the middle, in a high-backed chair, his throne, puffing on a cigar. Aisha sits on the arm of the chair, holding a cup and moving her shoulders to the music. Thanks to the dark screen on the door, I can see outside, but chances are they can't see inside. Kenya peeks into the hall from one of the bedrooms. In here. Devante lies on the floor in the fetal position at the foot of a king-size bed. The plush white carpet is stained with his blood as it trickles from his nose and mouth. There's a towel beside him, but he's not doing anything with it. One of his eyes has a fresh bruise around it. He groans, clutching his side. Seven looks at Chris.
Help me get him up.